My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends? I'm just trying to make you some money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate, teach you, and put it in context. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. You know what this market loves? It loves transparency. Lots of executives pay lip service to the concept of transparency without ever really doing anything about it. But today, a day that started strong before giving up the ghost, Dow ultimately gaining just 12 points, S&P dipping 0.09%, NASDAQ advancing 0.06%, we saw a triumph of true transparency. I'm talking about Apple. Apple, which saw its stock jump 2% in the wake of a spectacular quarter. Back in November of 2018, Apple upset a lot of people when it decided to change the way it reported. Management told us they'd no longer break out the unit sales for iPhones, Macs, iPads. Why? Because the CFO Luca Maestri explained at the time, the number of devices sold was no longer really a relevant metric in how to value the stock. Oh, the bears immediately came out in full force, arguing that Apple was no longer being transparent. They're obviously doing this to hide disappointing iPhone numbers. After all, why hide those numbers unless something's really wrong? I told you not to worry. And I said what I always say, own Apple, don't trade it. But the stock collapsed, falling from $222 down to $142 a few months later when Apple pre-announced the hideous shortfall thanks to a decline in their Chinese business. For a moment, it looked like the bears might be right. Maybe Apple really did go all opaque because its best days were behind it. You've heard that chorus. A few days later, I went out to see Tim Cook right at their headquarters. He had a better sense of what was really going on. Well, he said he never felt better about the company. He told me he wasn't surprised by the stock's decline because the market can be emotional in the short term. But he reassured me that the pipeline has, quote, never been better. And the ecosystem has, quote, never been stronger. While it was too soon to reveal what Apple was working on next, he doesn't like to do that. Tim made it clear that I'd be dazzled. So would you. Then the iPhone 11 came out, and that's exactly what happened. Most Wall Street types assume that this new phone would be nothing special. Number 11? I mean, come on. Yet it turned out to be Apple's biggest blockbuster yet. Why? As Tim Cook told me and Josh Lipton last night, the product is incredible. People love the battery life. They love the camera. Okay, look, it'll be a proud moment for a second. Look at this portrait of my wife, Lisa. Hashtag, of course, on iPhone 11. You know, it's just so great. That was one of hundreds of people who sent Tim Cook pictures that they took that were shot by true artists. It looks like, you know, Annie Leibovitz. It looks like Eisenstadt. I mean, it's Arbus. And now it's me. But the most amazing thing about this call last night, the growth of the iPhone itself, which was responsible for the stock's phenomenal surge today. Apple's now up 128% since everybody freaked out about this business a little over a year ago. Turns out Apple wasn't trying to be opaque at all when they changed the way they reported. The new pricing plan, starting at $35 a month for 24 months, they've made unit sales kind of a worthless metric, like Apple said it would be. Apple has nothing to hide. The phones are selling like crazy. Same goes for the supply-constrained AirPod Pro and the watch. In fact, the only line item that disappointed some people was the actual service revenue stream that everyone's so excited about. Up 16%, we wanted 17%. Long story short, the people who bet that one of the most transparent companies on Earth was trying to mislead us, have missed out on a stunning move. They couldn't have been more wrong. I hope you listened to me when I told you to stick with it. Hey, got that one right. I knew the bears were wrong because Apple has a tail. Every time the stock gets slammed, CFO Luca Maestri, he buys back the stock with both hands. He's actually like listening to this. Buy, 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 buy. I mean, the company retired nearly 7% of its share count this last year alone. And since 2012, they spent $325 billion on repurchases at an average price of $129. You know, by the way, that's 40% of the company's shares. Obviously, most of that happened when the stock got crushed a year ago or, you know, years before the program started. But Maestri was in there buying back stock all along. And that's the tale. Companies don't spend massive sums on buybacks if they believe their business is collapsing, trying to hoodwink you. Apple is truly transparent. You just had to take Tim Cook at his word. And you could have made a killing on this one. All right, who else has embraced radical transparency? General Electric. Under its old leadership, GE seemed determined to obscure every single weak portion of its business, which is pretty much every single part of its business. I only took a year of accounting, but even I could tell GE's bookkeeping smacked more of fiction than fact. There was no way to understand how the company was actually doing. But then they got this new guy in, Larry Culp, with a traditional industrial background, and he realizes you need to be an alchemist to understand these numbers. When Culp pulled everything apart, he discovered the business was in bad shape. And you know what he did? He told us everything. It was incredibly dispiriting when he revealed how bad things really were. Culp didn't care that it looked bad because he's a straight shooter. So when a forensic sage wrote a 175-page report, I'm not even going to distinguish him by mentioning his name, about how the numbers were really crooked that he was putting out, Culp had a ton of credibility when he responded by purchasing $2 million worth of stock at $7 and change. He called that hit piece, quote, market manipulation, pure and simple, end quote. Correct. Culp was already working to right the ship, and sure enough, the stock has roared since it bottomed last summer. Then today, GE jumped more than 10% after the company reported an upside surprise. Results were excellent. More importantly, they were easy to get your head around. They looked like the numbers you'd get from an industrial. You had a huge winner, and all you had to do was believe Larry Culp, a guy who's given you every reason to trust, including that gigantic open market purchase more than 5 points ago. Final act of transparency, it's Boeing. Here's a company that reported a hideous loss today, yet its stock rallied more than $5. What fueled the move? Simple. Management stopped offering us bogus reassurances about the grounded 737 MAX. They stopped telling the critics to shut up. Instead, they gave you cold, hard numbers, like the fact that their backlog hasn't gone down. But Boeing also made it clear that they don't know when the MAX will be back in the air. And that's up to the authorities. All they can do is try to make the plane as safe as possible. At long last, they were completely candid. They just don't know. Hearing that was frankly a breath of fresh air. Sometimes transparency means admitting what nobody wants to hear, that the fiasco is costing billions and billions of dollars, because that's the price Boeing needs to pay if they're going to get this thing right. And they'll probably end up spending even more before this is over. Why did that very bad news allow the stock to rally? Because Boeing stopped treating everyone like idiots. We were tired of the hubris and the bogus certainty we kept hearing from the previous regime. It's not like this was a surprise. We knew the MAX is a disaster. We just needed to hear management be honest about it. The bottom line, investors want the truth. When we get the truth, though, you need to recognize it for what it is, or you could miss out on some tremendous opportunities. It's easy to assume everyone in this business is totally cynical, but taking that approach kept you out of some monster gains at Apple and in GE. Some CEOs have earned the benefit of the doubt, and you should give it to them. Oh, and while I'm at it, guess whom they have given the benefit of the doubt to this very evening? None other than Elon Musk of Tesla fame, who has gotten about as transparent as you could get. Well, maybe not as transparent as the other big winner, Satya Nadella from Microsoft. Joe in New Jersey. Joe.
Jim, thank you for taking my call.
You're quite welcome.
My question is on John Deere. With the first phase of the China trade deal complete, will it help the farmers? And how is the coronavirus going to affect the company in terms of Chinese consumption? And by the way, I own John Deere equipment, and let me tell you something, Jim, nothing runs like a Deere.
I totally agree with you. I own Deere equipment, too. Nothing runs like a Deere, and the stuff is indestructible. Here's what I have to say. Forget the short-term machinations about China. What matters is Deere's a great manufacturer. Phase one is good for them. The ag market right now is weaker, along with all commodities. That's a great time to buy some stock of Deere. How about Miguel in Tennessee? Miguel.
Jimmy Chill.
You bet.
Booyah from Tennessee, my guy.
Jimmy Chill's being tried and tested by the Tesla people who don't realize that I like it. But go ahead. What's going on?
So the Royal Rumble just passed, which means WrestleMania is near. I know it brings a lot of entertainment success. Will it bring stock success for WWE?
Well, I'm not as much of a fan. I liked them when they were on, but you know what? You want to play it another way? Let's take the take two, where I have to believe that Strauss-Zelnick has been able to capitalize on it more than almost anybody. How about Steve in Virginia? Steve.
Hey, Jim, I'll try and be real brief. I'm 57, recently retired, got a decent pension. I'm looking to add CSX to a well-rounded, solid, long-term growth portfolio.
I think it's very smart, but it's not a growth stock. What it is a company that's been able to figure out, even with revenue not doing well, how much money it can still make anyway with Precision Railroad. All you have to do is look at Norfolk Southern today, where, by the way, the volumes were horrendous, and the company cleaned up. That's Precision Railroad. I think that means treating the customer the way the customer should be. Investors want the truth, people, and when they get the truth, You got to recognize it for what it is. Hail Man tonight, the big game just a few days away. I'm focusing on the companies that can score big for your portfolio as my countdown to kickoff continues. Then, Penn National just bet on Barstool Sports. So should you be ready for Barstool branded casinos? I'm talking to the heads of the two companies to find out what the partnership means. And Stryker helps people get back on their feet. But can the stock run up on Wall Street, or is the recent decline a tad of a red flag? Don't miss my exclusive. And stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com. Take control of your financial future with the new madmoney.cnbc.com. Cramer's exclusive CEO interviews, full episodes, analysis, even your own soundboard. Plus, special access to Mad Money 101 with rules and techniques to break down the market for all investors.
The red flag that makes me drop a stock immediately is...
It's everything you need right when you need it. The new madmoney.cnbc.com.
With the big game only 5 days away, I'm spending all this week comparing some of our favorite stocks to the players in Sunday's face-off between the Chiefs and the 49ers. Well, I wish you could say the name of the face-off, but the NFL trademarked it. Ever since I started taping the show almost 15 years ago, I've been trying to make the process of investing more accessible for regular people, young, old, doesn't matter. And so that's why I like something that kind of America's pastime, the football analogy. If you understand how a given player fits in their team, you can understand how a company fits into a given industry. Now, on Monday, we talked quarterbacks, and yesterday, we talked running backs. Tonight's all about wide receivers, where teams look when they want to gain lots of yards and points in a hurry. In the last few years, there's been a major shift in the league toward passing. This position has become more important than ever. Now, there's a reason most fantasy football drafts almost always include a couple of top-flight wide receivers in their first rounds, and you know their names. I'm talking about Michael Thomas, DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones, Devontae Adams. But the fact that there's a small group of stars tells you a lot about the promise and the peril of being a wide receiver. These players are capable of making huge plays, but they can also be erratic. Boom, bust, production. In short, they're just like speculative growth stocks, especially in tech. High-risk, high-reward players. You can see big gains if you pick the right one and catch a sustained move. But oh, God help you if you pick the wrong one. So what's the analogy here? Well, the best wide receiver for Kansas City is somebody I just really love. It's the electric, eclectic to some degree, Tyreek Hill from San Francisco. It's Deebo Samuels. Not as good as Tyreek Hill, but for the purposes of our analogy, it'll work. Now, Hill reminds me of the stock of Shopify, the rapidly growing e-commerce facilitator. While Samuel, now he is a rookie, he feels like the stock of Roku, the streaming video play with a stock that's exploded higher over the past year. But as you can see, it can be inconsistent when it comes to stock performance. Okay, let me tell you why. Why don't we start with Tyreek, okay, and the Chiefs. Now, Tyreek's in his fourth season, having established himself as one of the NFL's most exciting and, of course, maybe the fastest player in the NFL. Over the year, he's become an incredibly consistent receiver. You know, he did get injured early this season, but he's a tough kid. After he came back in early October, he fell right back into form, more than 500 yards receiving and five total touchdowns in his first five games post-injury. Most recently, he had a huge game in the playoffs against the Texans, hauling in five receptions on seven passes for 67 yards and two touchdowns. Well, best of all, Tyreek Hill is an exciting player. His gains often come in big chunk plays. He averaged 15 yards per reception this season, and that average was weighed down by the fact that he also runs a lot of screen plays. To me, that feels a lot like Shopify. Oh, you know, the cloud-based software company that helps small businesses set up their online stores. Like Hill, Shopify's moves tend to come in big chunks, producing some incredible long-term performance. Last year, the stock nearly tripled. It's already up close to 20% for 2020. Does, like Hill, seems pretty unstoppable. Also, like Hill, Shopify stock got injured last year, selling off hard, okay, during the big momentum sell-off in the fall, like so many other stocks in that same category. Then, come November, the stock bottomed, and it came roaring right back, right around the time Tyreek started playing again. The darn thing has now rallied nearly 200 points in less than 3 months' time. She gave it a speeding ticket. We foolishly sold this one from my charitable trust last summer. It did catch a 50% gain, so woulda, shoulda, coulda, but I am kicking myself because that's unfortunately my nature. In short, Shopify is a great momentum player, and so is Tyreek. Now, while we're on the subject of Kansas City, they also have another terrific wide receiver. That's Sammy Watkins. First-round draft pick for Buffalo, 2014. Production's lately faltered. Under leadership of Chiefs head coach Andy Reid, though, he's had an amazing resurgence. It kind of reminds me, until today, when the stock got killed, AMD, a big chip maker, and the leadership of is no longer that new CEO, Dr. Lisa Su. For years, this thing was also an also-ran semiconductor play. Now it's an industry leader with a stock that was up close to 150% last year. And what's funny about this one is if Sammy Watkins folders like AMD did today, then the game, big game may be won by, yes, the Niners. How about the Niners? Like I told you on Monday, the 49ers are unusual these days, and that they have a run-first offense doesn't put up prolific passing statistics. That's not the strategy, so they don't have a really breakout star wide receiver. And their best wide receiver is a guy I actually drafted and then, of course, cut because I was dope. It's Deebo Samuel. Compiled just over 800 yards receiving and added 3 touchdowns during the regular season because passing is not a huge part of the team's strategy. Still, Deebo's a great player. And this was a rookie season, and he was phenomenal at the NCAA level playing for South Carolina. The thing is, he's also a little inconsistent. Full disclosure, Deebo was an on-again, off-again member of the team Kramer. Boy, I look at him, it's like he was off my team whenever he got the touchdowns. And by the way, my fantasy team is in the not-your-average slump of Dickel League. I mentioned that because everybody in the league was saying, why don't you mention the league? I dropped him. Well, anyway, I dropped him then later in November. Just bad call. I keep going back and forth on this guy, though, because it reminds me of Roku, which is I dropped it, I like. I mean, this is the ultimate inconsistent growth stock. It's a versatile player. They used to be a hardware company making devices that let you stream video from the internet directly to your TV. But in recent years, they've moved aggressively into software. Now Roku's technology gets embedded in most smart TVs. Here, people were betting against it, and they thought Amazon was going to kill it. And then, boom, more software, more, let's say, well, I would say that it's pretty much in your TV if you check on it in the new one. We underestimated Roku from the get-go after it came public in 2017. Stock sagging from 30 to 20 out of the gate. Then it rallied to 70 by October of 2018 before melting down to the 30s during the nasty fourth quarter sell-off. In the first 8 months of 2019, Roku mounted an insane rally. Stock flying all the way to 176 early last September. Then it plummeted below 100 by the end of the month. Boy, is this Dever Deebo. For rebounding to the 160s in November. Spent the last couple of months drifting lower again, backsliding to 129 as of today. It's just an agonizing stock. In short, Roku simultaneously up more than 200% over the past 12 months and down roughly 23% from the November highs. Wall Street keeps going back and forth and back and forth on the stock. Just like the not-your-average slump of Dickel League went back and forth on Deebo. In all honesty, I keep getting both of them wrong. I always like to tell you when I get them right, but I also like to tell you when I got them wrong. And Roku's one I got wrong. So what should you do with Shopify and Roku here? I absolutely love Shopify. It's the single best non-Amazon e-commerce play out there, certainly even after Facebook tonight disappointed. I've developed a great deal of respect for Roku, though. These are both momentum stocks that trade on revenue growth, which makes them tough to value. They're both very expensive here on any metric you care to name, and they both have a tendency to sell off hard when the market turns against momentum. That's why I compare them to wide receivers, because you want to throw the ball to these stocks when they're open. I don't think this is the right time. I think you should wait for a pullback, and then you can pull the trigger. Shopify and Roku both report in a couple of weeks. Let's hope they deliver good numbers, and then they'll get hit like we saw with AMD today. Bottom line, high-flying tech stocks like Shopify or Roku are just like quality wide receivers along the lines of Tyreek Hill or secondarily Deebo Samuel. When everything goes right, they're explosive players who can get their team a significant amount of production in big chunks. But you don't want to be there if they drop the ball. Stick with Tyreek and stick with Kramer. Ever since the Supreme Court legalized sports gambling in 2018, we've been looking for potential winners to really step up and take advantage of an amazing opportunity. That's exactly what Penn National Gaming did today. I mean, here's a company that runs dozens of casinos, racetracks, and today they did something huge. They bought 36% equity stake in Barstool Sports. valuing the incredibly popular digital media play at $450 million. Penn National's demographics skew older, and they spend a lot of money trying to attract customers. With Barstool as a partner, they may be able to lure in, well, let's say the company's much younger fan base and rabid fan base. I think it's brilliant. It's not astonishing. It's a great move to give the company a newer, younger public face. More profitable, too. So don't take it from me. Let's check in with Jay Snowden, the president and CEO of Penn National, as well as Erica Nardini. She's the CEO of Barstool, and El Prez, Dave Portnoy, Barstool's founder. Everyone, welcome. Thank you. Congratulations, because this is really one exciting thing. Erica, I'm starting with you.
All right.
You could have been independent. You were doing unbelievably well. Actually, you had accelerating revenue growth. Why this? Why now?
Penn was the right partner for us. They had all the things we wanted. They wanted the Barstool Sports brand. They had the largest retail footprint in the United States. They have a great management team, and they have a shared vision of winning in sports betting, which was something Dave's thought about for a long time, and we were very committed to as a company. So
I think it's important you said about Dave thought about it for a long time, because I think people might think, wait a second, this is an overnight success. The truth is, you've been putting out a rag for a long time.
Yeah, we've been around 17 years now, Barstool Sports. It started as a gambling newspaper, Fantasy Sports. I handed it out outside a subway station. So we've been at it a very long time, yeah.
Well, and Jay, what did you see here? Because the way I look at this is that you have a 55-year-old base, which is not bad. Hey, listen, I ruined your demo. but you've decided to do what is really kind of a radical makeover. You've decided to go young.
Yeah. Well, when PASPA was overturned in May of 2018 and sports betting became a state-by-state legal opportunity for us, we're in 19 states. We operate 41 properties, and we are represented in more states than any gaming company in the world. And what we were missing, however, in this equation to really participate in the sports betting opportunity, we didn't have a sports brand.
Right.
And so we met Dave and Erica in July. And honestly, we met two or three times. You knew a deal was happening. It came together very quickly. They have the brand. They have the fan base. We have the distribution. We have the infrastructure. And it really makes a lot of sense.
Okay, so where will I see the name Barstool? It'll be on an app. It'll be at the casino. Are you going to be Barstool?
I don't know about if I'm going to be Barstool, at least in the near future. You will see a Barstool Sportsbook app in August of this year before football season. You will see Barstool Sportsbooks, retail sports books at all of our casinos where it's legal, and you will likely see Barstool sports bars throughout our properties as well. We're very excited about the brand and very excited about working with Dave and Erica.
Okay, Dave, you know I think that you are the bright star of this year. I said it to you behind. I said it at the Eagles game. I just feel it. But I'm going to ask point blank. Are you going to be compensated enough? Because I think that to some degree you've got a media empire, and I've always felt that a media empire should be a mogul. Will you be a mogul?
Yeah, so it's twofold. A, I was compensated well, but for me, the opportunity is so big, I'm trying to get to, like, buy sports team type mogul.
Yes!
This is hopefully what's going to take us there, and I believe in it 1,000,000%. So, yeah, I think we're doing pretty well. Everybody's doing pretty well.
I would just jump in real quick, because when we were talking about this deal and how it could come together, I had proposed to both Dave and Erica if the consideration that was going to the two of them could be more Penn equity than cash.
Yes.
And guess what they said? We want the same thing. Didn't even talk to each other. Didn't look at each other. Looked at me and said, we want Penn equity as well.
Well, that's fab. I mean, straight shooting people should be like that. I see that they also get one bite.
We'll build one bite pizza bars, pizza restaurants.
Well, one bite could be worth $400.
But it still may be. And now we'll
no,
have...
No, I'm not saying. It's definitely. That's what I do for a living. I know this.
We love one bite.
I think
do
it's
you want to buy it?
I think do I want to buy it? I'd do it in a nanosecond. You kidding me? I've had one bite.
Let's talk.
Well, yeah, you may have to buy it from this guy. That's fine. I mean, but we'll be putting pizza places, hopefully, in their casinos and things. It all plays together. It's hard to separate any of it. Barstool has this huge funnel, and what makes this work is giving someplace now to leverage it, you know, to monetize them all by placing the bets, placing orders, all of it.
Now, why do you come up with a $7 to $10 billion betting thing? I actually think that maybe in its infancy it would be that, but it's not everybody's DNA like it is in Dave. But if it's legal, I thought every Sunday people are trying to figure out whether to take the one or not.
Yeah, look, we built this company on under promise, over deliver.
Okay.
So we're using what are probably conservative estimates. That's for 2025. That's not 2030.
Okay.
And then so I think there's an opportunity, especially as states legalize, because you're making a lot of bets here, like which states, when does it happen?
Right.
So we're guessing, but $7 to $10 billion by 2025 feels like a conservative estimate.
But it was amazing the moment you did the deal. your stock went up more than the price that you're paying.
It did. Yeah, that's always a sign of a good deal.
Right? Isn't that what it works? Okay, so, Erica, let me ask you. Some of the casino commissions can be conservative. Mm-hmm. You guys, I don't think you're radical, but there are people, I'm sure, in the audience who say, listen, you're radical. You worried at all about that some of these organizations might say, you know what, I don't know if I think Barstool's the right thing.
You know, we thought about that a lot from the onset of what this partnership would look like. Jay and I spent over a week on the road meeting with every single possible regulator we could meet with. We take gaming regulations really seriously. We will implement those. The way Dave would describe it is, if you give us the boundaries, we'll play within the boundaries. So it will create changes within our company from behind the scenes, how we understand what the rules are, making sure we have the right infrastructure to make content that fits those. But at the end of the day, we make content that breaks through because it resonates and it's real. And it's been real for 17 years. And we have almost 70 million fans who are engaging with us every month. We're going to continue to satiate them, and now we're going to do it with a place we can drive them.
And you're comfortable, Jay, with the idea that it's, you know, you're a conservative company, not necessarily in the way you may be conservative, but I mean, you know that these guys are a different culture.
No question. Yeah, we've spent a lot of time, as Erica said, and you know, Dave and I have had conversations. I feel like they understand what those guardrails are. We've talked about it. Erica's heard it firsthand from regulators with me. And we're all very comfortable. We can pull this off, and Barstool can be Barstool. It's such an amazing company, and it's so engaged with they're so engaged with their fans. It's so entertaining. They can still be all of that, but be responsible around topics like gambling.
Right. So you won't be reined in, right? I still get my press, right?
Yeah, I would never do a deal. It wouldn't work for anybody where I thought we couldn't be us. We're still going to be funny, irreverent. But like Erica said, there's guardrails, which we totally understand. And throughout the 17-year history, we've morphed. We understand we live in different times. There's different jokes you can make. So we'll play with them, and we'll be just as funny, if not funnier, than we've ever been.
Well, I don't want to be too touchy-feely with you because it destroys the chemistry. But you've dreamed of this.
Yes.
And you lived your dream, okay? I want people to hear it from El Prez, what it's like to live your dream.
You know, it's surreal. So for those people who don't know, before I started Barstool, I flew to Vegas and tried to get involved in the casino industry. It was a passion of mine. To come full circle now and be in the position that I actually want to start out, you know, sometimes you pinch yourself, but it's also a lot of people, I'm sure, out there who may doubt us, and that drives me. So I can't wait to attack this. It's something I've dreamed about. It's the perfect, you know, mixed, perfect relationship. So I'm excited to do it. I don't let myself dream too much. We're too much in the reality.
All right. And, you know, best in terms of the dream, though, you were born basically in the casino world.
Yeah. Look, this is, who would have thought 3 years ago even that you'd have an amazing sports media company and platform coming together with a gaming company with 41 properties? Like, who would have thought? But the sports betting is bringing it all together. It's our nexus to really thinking about the future and to targeting a younger demographic.
Well, you were five. Your mom was a dealer.
Yes, and I used to go pick up paychecks with her at the Frontier in Las Vegas and just knew I wanted to be in the business as a kid. And here we are talking about a whole different opportunity with sports betting.
Well, look, I want to congratulate all you guys. I mean, it's just one exciting thing, and I hope it's the beginning. I'm glad you're staying with it. I'm glad you're being compensated. You know I think you guys are worth a great deal, and thank you for giving them what they're worth. We care about them.
They're worth betting on.
You bet.
Yeah.
Okay, that's Erica Nardini and Dave Portnoy of Barstool Sports, and Jay Snowden, he's the Penn National President and CEO. Take a look at that stock. And you know what? Given the fact of what's going on in Macau, this is the gambling stock to own. Get money back in. On one of the busiest days of earnings season, I do not want you to overlook some of the companies that aren't getting enough credit from this market. I'm talking about companies like Stryker, the medical device play that makes orthopedic implants, especially knee and hip replacements, along with surgical equipment and neurotechnology. We're going to hear more about that for head and spine injuries. Last night, Stryker reported a strong quarter, modest top and bottom line beat, but 8% organic revenue growth, solid full-year guidance, yet the stock got hit anyway, slipping 1.6%. This is the buying opportunity. It's had a massive run. That's why it went down, I think. So let's take a close look with Kevin Lobo. He's the chairman and CEO of Stryker. Learn more about the quarter. He's with us for the first time in 5 years. And by the way, the stock's returned close to 170% since that last interview, trouncing the S&P 500. So, Mr. Lobo, welcome back to Mad Money. Congratulations on the quarter. Good to see you, sir.
Jim, thank you.
Have a seat.
Good to be back.
In many ways, we talk a lot about the millennials. but the baby boomers are aging. And they are basically in your hands, aren't they?
Yeah, demographics certainly play to our favor with the technologies that we have to offer. They play to the aging population, whether it's a hip or knee replacement, whether it's stroke. It really does give us a tailwind for growth.
Well, is that one of the reasons why you've had seven consecutive quarters of accelerating organic sales growth?
Well, really, that's the engine of our growth has been new product development, mm-hmm. where we've really spent an increased amount of money on R&D, going from 5% of revenue to over 6% of revenue. And we've been very acquisitive as a company. So we've acquired about 50 companies since I've been CEO 7 years ago. And each company that we buy tends to have a higher growth rate. So after 1 year, it anniversaries, and then it becomes part of organic growth.
It referenced you to a big acquisition of Wright Medical. Initially, I know people were saying, I don't know how that's doing. It looks like it's killing it.
Well, that deal we announced in the fourth quarter, it'll close later on in 2020. So it hasn't closed yet.
Okay.
But it's a very exciting deal. It's about.
I mean, I'm looking at the numbers.
The revenue is $1 billion growing 10%. There aren't a lot of billion-dollar companies growing 10%. We had a 5x multiple of sales for that company. For MedTech, that's actually a very good price that we're paying. But it did spook some of the analysts a little bit,
yeah.
just the size of the deal and in the fact that it's going to be a little bit dilutive. If you remember, the last time I was here, we had announced the Mako acquisition,
yeah.
which was a little bit dilutive early.
And how did that turn
it's been
out?
A complete home run.
And that's the robot. Please explain the robotics.
Yeah, it's robotic assistance surgery for hip and knee replacement. And so now there's no debate. Robotics is here to stay in orthopedics. When we did that deal, it was really the first company in robotics-assisted surgery. Now, one out of every three of our knees is done with the robot. We have 700 of these robots across the United States. It's been a complete game changer.
How would anyone not want a robot? I mean, for instance, like Da Vinci. Some of these things I did for the local hospital. I did a pitch for Da Vinci.
Sure.
I mean, why would I not want to use Mako? I mean, it's got to be an advantage for a hospital that has one.
Absolutely. It's been, a complete game changer, not only for the patients and for the customers, but even for the hospitals who have it. They've attracted more volume as a result. So Da Vinci is the leader for general surgery or soft tissue. Mako is the leader for hard tissue or bone replacement.
Now, neuro is fascinating to me. It's delicate, it's difficult, but I guess you guys are doing something that nobody else has done before.
Well, this is a very new industry, so for stroke treatment in particular.
Yes.
So we have three businesses within neuro, but stroke is the biggest one. We call it our neurovascular business.
Mm-hmm.
So this is endovascular treatment for ischemic and hemorrhagic strokes. So if you have a bulging blood vessel, we pack that blood vessel with titanium coils through the femoral artery. Or if you have a clot in the brain, you can pass a stent and pull the stent out. The industry is only about 15 years old.
Yeah.
It's growing high double digits. We're treating more and more patients. It's life-saving. And also, it can be very debilitating. Even if you do survive a stroke, you could be paralyzed. With our treatments, you get that treatment done, and you're back to normal life.
Okay, one of the things that always disturbed me about Stryker, there's always these guys rumoring that you're going to be bought. You want to be independent. You have had 40 years of consecutive sales growth. The best record of anyone in the publicly traded.
Yeah, it's a pretty remarkable track record if you think about it. We went public in 79, 40 consecutive years of sales growth. Our market cap's now $80 billion. So when we were smaller, sure, we were subject to lots of rumors, but now we're a large med tech player. It wouldn't be so easy for someone to acquire us.
At the same time, you've got so much white space. Emerging markets, you're there, but you've got a lot of room. China, too.
Absolutely. It's only about 6% of our revenue, emerging markets. But last year, we had the best year since I've been at Stryker in emerging markets. Strong double-digit growth, great performance in China, India, Brazil, Turkey, Russia, all those markets growing beautifully. Now, it took us a few years.
Right.
We made management changes. We actually acquired distributors to get closer to our customers, but they are paying off. And for us, we have a huge runway for growth in emerging markets.
Yeah, well, let me ask you, you're a medical guy, and I just, you know, I hate to say this, but like any medical guy, I'm like, just please tell me. You're in China. What are you hearing coronavirus?
So right now, it's really early,
yeah.
and it's really that area. We don't have a lot of employees, and we don't have a lot of business in that area. Our employees, fortunately, are all safe. But it's such a small portion of our overall business that it's not going to have much of an impact, I don't think. But it's still too early, really, to gauge the impact that it's going to have.
Now, I just want to talk about the knee business. There was a period during the Great Recession where they actually, knee surgery went down. I mean, it's supposed to be, like, I think, the ultimate non-cyclical thing, but how did it come back, and what happened during that period?
So knee surgery is elective, right? And if you don't stay on your knee, unlike hip surgery, then you don't have pain. So hip surgery, if you have hip pain, even at night, you feel it.
Right.
If you're off your knee, you don't feel it. Or you could delay it with some kind of a shot, hyaluronic acid or some kind of a shot. You can delay the procedure. But ultimately, you do need the knee to be replaced. And right now, the market's been very robust. It's been growing 3%, 4%, 5%. each of the last 5 years.
Do you think that's right, that it's not? I mean, I've always felt that, and my college roommate had both knees replaced. I mean, you were kind of not able to do anything.
That's the issue, right? So you can delay the knee replacement, but you can't get back to playing golf. You can't get back to the activities that you've normally done. But now, with Mako robotic-assisted surgery, with doing knees without bone cement, there's less pain, faster recovery. The word is spreading that the patients not only have the knee for a long time, but they're satisfied, right? There used to be a dissatisfaction rate of around 25% with knee replacements. So you didn't have the full range of motion. It didn't feel quite as natural as a hip replacement, but the surgeries are getting better, and the word is spreading. So you're right. I do believe this will be a tailwind for a long, long time.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that. I mean, you know, someone who's hopefully not need it, but it's certainly it's in the toolkit.
Well, when you're ready, we'll be able to help you.
I hope I'm not that ready that fast, but you have a great long-term story, and I don't want people, when they see the stock down today, think anything other than what an opportunity. Yeah. Okay, that's Kevin Lobo, Chairman and CEO of Stryker. By the way, it's a fascinating company. Go to the website. You'll see all the things they're doing. It's bionic. NetMoney's back at the break. It is time. It's time for the lightning round. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski? Time for the lightning round, Kishma. Let's start with Jerry in New York. Jerry.
Hey, Jim, thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
What are your thoughts on AT&T?
You know, I didn't think the quarter was nearly as bad as the stock react. The stock's down $1.50, yields 5.6. I think the yield's safe. I'm actually a buyer here. Let's go to Andrew in Georgia. Andrew.
Silicon Laboratory.
Yeah, they missed the quarter badly in a market where semiconductors are all hitting out of the park, so I have to say stay away. James in Connecticut. James.
How you doing, Kramer?
I am good. How about you?
It's the last of the characters on TV that really know how to teach. I learned a lot from you.
That's what we're trying to do, teach every night. What's going on?
I have one suggestion, and then I'll give you the stock. CEO of this company has been working on this for 5.5 years. They're FDA-approved, 25% cardiac care patients improvement.
Right.
The name of the stock is Amarin, and supposedly Pfizer and one other company are looking at it as a takeover.
I don't know about the takeover side, but I totally agree with you in terms of the excitement of the situation and what they've got going. Count me as a speculative buyer. Let's go to Anthony in Michigan. Anthony!
Hello, Professor Kramer.
Yes.
Would you tell me if Ver VIR biotechnology is a buy and why and why not?
Man, what is that like? That's a biotech stock that I don't know enough to opine on, so I'd rather just say let me come back. I need to go to Prash in Illinois. Prash!
Hey, what's up, Jim? I got a quick question for you. A small market cap company called ManQuest. It's up about 400% in 2 months.
Yeah, so that stock is like quintupled in like 5 minutes. So I got to come back on that one, too. I'd rather, as everyone knows, when it comes to these biotechs, I'd rather say, let me kick the tires than just say, yeah, that looks good or that looks bad, because that's not what I do on this show. Let's go to Gabe in Florida. Gabe.
Booyah, Kramer.
Booyah, Gabe.
Twitter has lagged Snap and Facebook for a while now, my man. Do you think Twitter is going to continue to outperform?
I don't know, because I'm watching Facebook fall because the growth is slowing. I'm wondering whether people say that therefore you should buy Twitter because that's a more attractive opportunity, or do people say the web is slowing? So we have to hold that in abeyance. I do happen to think, and my Chapel Trust sold some Facebook, maybe not enough, but we have such a big gain and it didn't want to take the taxes. Let me do some more work. But I do happen to like Twitter. I do, and I use it a lot, obviously, a lot. Let's go to John in Florida. John.
Yeah, hi, Jim. It's been quite a while. It's John Kay in Dunedin, Florida.
Hey, how you been, John? What's going on?
Jim, can you give me your insight on Rite Aid, RAD?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this was a short squeeze when they reported the quarter. It went up big, and then it came back down. You know what? Look, I can't game short squeezes. What I like is CVS. That's Charlie Victor, not the pathetic CBS, which is now the pathetic Viacom. CVS is a better buy. Larry Merlot doing a fantastic job there. Let's go to Richard in California. Richard!
Hey, what's up, Kramer? Thanks. I'm calling you from Oakland, former home of the Warriors.
Yeah, the town. We call Oakland the town on the show. What's up? Thanks for the Warriors total
sack. Right on. You're hip to town, yeah. But now I got to say go Niners, too, since the Raiders are leaving to Vegas.
True.
But hey, was calling about Sprout Farmers Market. And what's going on?
Raiders left and Warriors left, I think you should leave this stock. It's just certainly not where you want to be. I mean, it's all the worst combination. You're up against Amazon. You got dairy. You got beer. And you've got retail. And you've got store. And you got grocery. In other words, stay away. Let's go to Connor in New Jersey. Connor.
Hi, Jim. My name's Connor. I'm from Mountainside, New Jersey. I was curious as to your
I like your, you have Delta. very good Elks in Mountainside.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
I was curious as to your thoughts on LyondellBasell.
You know, when I saw how well Dow Chemical did, and I got to speak with Jim Fitterling today, he's talking about inventories being very low, I immediately thought, you know what, Lyondell is the way to go. I would be a buyer. And that, ladies and gentlemen, conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
What are you doing? The market's just plain wrong. You have to be bold enough to take the other side of the trade. That's what you do. These mistakes tend to correct themselves, and you want to be there when that happens. Sometimes it takes minutes. Sometimes it takes days, but you got to make a move. I bring this up because the market makes tons of mistakes, especially during earnings season, when there's so much news coming that it's impossible for investors to process it all at once, as we see after the close tonight, where people are trading things crazily. Well, why don't you look at the stock of McDonald's? I've been following this company forever. Early this morning, when I was trying to suss out the results from Dow Chemical and General Electric, and by the way, half a dozen other companies, McDonald's reported. I immediately focused on same-store sales. Always the ultimate key metric for McDonald's. Boom, they came in at 5% global, U.S. up 6. Number was so good, I thought I'd be a typo. Company was kind enough to send me a hard copy, though, and it was no typo. It was the real thing. But when I checked what the pajama traders were doing at McDonald's, now I'm talking about the people who trade before the open while they wear their Dr. Denton footy pajamas, well, they were selling it. Yep, rather than correctly rallying and buying the stock was down 1.5. At first, I thought there must be a catch. Maybe I missed something bad in the quarter. But there was no catch. The pajama clowns were just plain wrong. Sure enough, McDonald's stock came roaring back, closing up 2%. Buying into weakness this morning was like taking candy from a pajama-clad baby. Unfortunately, the market's erroneous judgment on McDonald's has already corrected itself. Let me give you two more where you still have an opportunity. Starbucks and AMD. This morning, I had the privilege of interviewing both their CEOs, Kevin Johnson from Starbucks, and he's a suit from AMD. I spent hours working on these 7 to 10 minute interviews. Ask my wife, it's nuts. Because what's the point of having this kind of access if I don't ask the best questions for you? And here's what I saw. Both these stocks got hit today, and they don't deserve it. Starbucks reported 5% global growth, 6% in America. Unbelievably good. Only a few years ago, we were worried that this chain could never get back to 4% because of all the newfound competition from the boutique guys, the Blue Bottle, the Cologne, Stumptown, Bluestone Lane. But nope, though, through its own ingenuity, technology, improvements, longer hours, new products, loyalty programs, Starbucks has clawed its way back on top. The problem? It's got a huge China business, and suddenly everybody's terrified, of course, and maybe even correctly with the coronavirus outbreak. Starbucks has closed half its doors in the PRC, and the situation over there is too uncertain for management to give a forecast. They called it dynamic. That was all I needed to see. I talked to Jeff Marks, research head for ActionAlertsPlus.com Club, because we own the stock, my Chapel Trust, and we knew the stock was going to go lower. We knew it. However, we also knew the decline was wrong. Why? Because sooner or later, this coronavirus will peak. And when it does, I bet Starbucks goes to $100. That's why I think the stock's a fabulous buying opportunity down here at 86 and change off $1.88 today, AMD. Here's a stock that had a huge run from the last quarter to this one. Well, the conference call management sounded circumspect about the future. That gave the weekend investors an excuse to sell after some really good numbers. What's the truth here? AMD's on track to deliver another huge year. It's got a roadmap, it's got the chips, and it's got the demand, especially with the new gaming cycle coming and the endless cloud build-out. AMD was down 6% today, and the lower it goes, well, the more I like it. Both these stocks are wrongly priced. Neither reflects the real story underneath. Can they still go down? Of course. But I'm saying point blank that neither Starbucks nor AMD is priced for the future, which is why you should use any additional weakness to do some buying. Stick with Cramer.
We'll be right back.
when Satya Nadella said, listen, my shareholders will let me have the right to be able to be carbon negative. Well, you know what? They gave it to him again because what an unbelievable blowout quarter. And then Tesla, they're so far ahead of where we thought they were, well, that people can't stop buying the stock. I wonder if anyone's still short because, oh my, has that been a nasty squeeze. Like I say, there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise you I'd find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer, and I will see you tomorrow.